Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 451 for comics originally released on March 30th, 2016. Now, starting us out in DC is Batman and Robin Eternal number 26. This is the conclusion of this weekly series. It's been going on half a year now. It is written by James Tynion IV. Scott Snyder also is helping out on that. Man, we've got a bunch of artists this time. We've got Scott Eaton, Carlo Paglia. I'm going to butcher a lot of these names. I apologize to the artists. So again, Carlo Pagulayan, Igor Vitorino, and Geraldo Borgs. So that's right, the Borgs have invaded.
And the cover has tons of creators listed. Tons.
I know, it's all of those, plus I think they had like four different inkers, too. Plus two colorists, quite a few people. Yeah, quite a few people worked on this.
But it came out on time. Hats off.
It did. Yep. It did. They didn't miss a week on this. That's impressive. Overall, I've really been enjoying the series.
Yeah, it's been good. I think 26 is better than 52.
Funny you would phrase it that way, but yes, I would agree. I don't know, actually. I enjoyed 52. I think this had, by and large, better payoff, and it had the advantage of pretty much a single plot line. Whereas 52 had, you know, five or six, and not all of them had the payoff.
Yeah, there was some meandering in this. I probably could have shaved half a dozen of these issues off pretty easily and got to a little tighter story. I maybe even cut it in half. But yeah, overall, I've enjoyed it.
I don't know. I didn't feel it was that padded or anything, but I agree. There's some they could have trimmed probably. Overall, I enjoyed it. This issue resolved one of the major mysteries of the DC Universe, in my opinion. We have now firmly established the Power Rangers exist in the DC Universe, at least as a television show.
That was bugging you.
No, not really. But it was there, so I thought I'd mention. I liked how the last couple of issues they've brought in some other people to kind of help out, fighting in the various global areas. I was particularly surprised to see Talon, because he pretty much vanished into the ether after his series ended. But, you know, he's had a cameo the last few issues. I don't know that he ever said a single word.
No.
Not that he was particularly talkative to begin with. The one thing that got me was at one point in here, I'm a big fan of the different Robin characters and such. And they get the whole thing. A lot of this is a major fight scene with Mother, the big villain of the piece. And at one point, she's got these, like, electro swords or whatever. And she's going after Dick Grayson. And Red Robin throws him a sword. And, like, suddenly all of the Robins are there with swords. Like, when did this become a big thing for the Robins? Now, if you're going to throw, you know, Dick Grayson anything, Excrema sticks or whatever that he sports as Nightwing would make sense to me. But this whole, let's get the swords out and go, you know, feudal Japan or whatever on them, it worked. It just felt a little odd.
Probably cooler for them to draw.
I will grant you that. And I'll grant a sword seems natural in Damien's hands more than any of the others, but it does make for a cool fight scene, so. They did a lot with the Harper Row character in this series, and I've got kind of mixed feelings. I liked her getting a bit more screen time and a bit more fleshed out. But it felt like they kind of did some major retcons to her backstory to really sort of establish her as Bluebird or whatever. And I don't know, it just, it worked. I'm just not crazy about it.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I read her first appearance in Batman. Was that like 5 or 6 or something like that? It was way back there. So I couldn't remember some of her backstory as well. So this stuff that they did really fleshed her out and made her character really engaging and one to root for. But yeah, I couldn't remember if it really jived with what I had read before.
Well, the whole bit of what had happened to her mother and stuff like that, I think, was new with this storyline. and at least the details of it. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I know.
I think it worked.
They were on their own. They were on their own when we met them, I think, originally. But I don't think, yeah, we knew many details back then.
We certainly knew nothing about the villain mother having, you know, orchestrated the death and all of that stuff. And it works. It fits in with what they had established in the past. But it also kind of makes her a wannabe Robin, almost. And it works. I don't know that that's the direction that I think they should have gone. But they told an entertaining story. I wasn't upset with any of the decisions they made. It just felt, again, like a little derivative or whatever. But I think she's a very good addition to the Batman family. And I like seeing Cassandra Cain, who at one point had been Batgirl and is now kind of reestablished as a player in the Batman family and stuff. I liked how she got a lot of screen time in the series and in this issue. Same with Spoiler. I think they did a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, I can see them doing something a la Marvel with the you know, since there's multiple Spider women over there that are kind of doing some things and interacting and teaming up. I could kind of see DC going in that direction and pulling these characters into one book or having them at least cross over a little more and telling some stories that way. I think that would be fun. I'm not sure which one gets their own book. Which one's the breakout? I'm not really sure. I would probably go Harper Row, but I'm not 100% on that. I could be easily swayed.
I would kind of split the difference and go with like a Batman family title. But unlike how it was back in the day where it was a true anthology book, we've got enough of these Robin-level characters. If you include Harper, Row, Cassandra Cain, Spoiler, and all the different Robins, and really you've got Batwoman and a few others you could toss in there too. Do it as an oversized book. Have each character have their own plot line, but not their own storyline. And what I mean by that is if they did it with integrated stories, much like how this series was done, it's not one, well, I'm only getting, you know, 8 pages out of the whole thing. Now, because it's not got a different creative team, different credits, and kind of this is just the solo chapter, you may only get really 8 pages featuring that character spread across the issue, but it feels like you're just weaving different plot lines in and out of one story versus it feeling like it's disconnected stories. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think... You know, most of the guys already have their own books, so I think at least one or two of them should get it. They should get their shot at a solo title, and maybe a team-up book.
If you've got a title that is the rest of the Batman crew that doesn't have their own books, as individual ones, like Damian's got his own right now, Nightwing or Grayson, you know, okay, fine. They're focused more on their other book. They show up periodically here. But they've got enough characters in play that they could rotate through. Maybe we see a bit of Talon. Maybe we don't see him for a while. Maybe he comes back. Things of that sort. So I think it could work. And if they did it as not a true anthology, but as kind of a team book or something, it could be a lot of fun. They certainly showed they could balance and juggle this many characters in a weekly series. So I could certainly think they could do it monthly.
Yeah. And you know, I hate to call them out on this, but sometimes the big two copy each other, and I know that's a secret, but sometimes
a closely guarded one that most of the planet's aware of.
Sometimes they steal each other's ideas, and I know, you know, with Silk and Spider-Gwen and all the other iterations that are popping up over in Marvel, I could just see them trying to do something like that in a few months after Rebirth runs its course.
Yeah, whether they do it as solo titles that interconnect or whatever, they've got a lot of great characters here that I would like to see not just sitting on the shelf, you know, in the back burner of the DC office. I'd like to see them telling stories with these characters. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
I thought this was a solid ending to the storyline. It was a little heavy on exposition here and there, but there was a lot of character relationship stuff that needed to be resolved, and some of it you just can't do without tons of dialogue. So I guess it's more... maybe not exposition heavy, but dialogue heavy is the better way to phrase that. The only, you know, serious complaint I have about this, because overall I really liked it, the last page, last panel, really great shot. I think the colorist really did it a disservice by having a lot of the colors just kind of muted versus really popping off the page. It was something that just undercut the the end of the issue for me substantially. And it may seem like a minor thing, but when you've got this maybe not iconic shot, but really nice shot of Batman and the different Robins, and the title is Batman and Robin Eternal, don't kind of mute out or subdue the colors of the Robins, making them seem like it's second fiddle and it's all Batman here.
Yeah, and it could have been they could have sacrificed that top panel inset and made that a full page splash too, which would have been a little more real estate as well. I think that could have helped.
I think a different artist, and I don't know who, I think a more seasoned artist would have put that last panel on the previous page, so it's ends on that question, page flip, get the answer, and it would have been something as good as this was, could have been a bit more dynamic and just, hey, put this as a poster, guys.
Yeah.
And really ended on just a really, really strong note. As it was, it ended good, but it could have ended much better.
Mm-hmm.
I was also a little kind of nonplussed by the opening with the flashback sequence. We get some interesting stuff with Harper's mom and whatnot, but it just felt a little almost heavy-handed. You know, this is all you've lost, and, you know, make us... feel it a bit more because they showed it to us so heavy-handed or whatever. There were a couple of things here and there that I think could have been a little better. The opening of the issue more so than the rest of it with this case. But overall, I thought this series, when it hit its high points, just did a great job and never really dived into, you know, boring or unacceptable or anything of the sort for me. Certainly, there were some issues that were better than others, but I felt this was a solid conclusion to the story and got the payoff, and it worked for me.
Oh yeah, this was a good issue. I was looking forward to this conclusion though. It was a little long in the tooth for me. I think some of that, the stuff with the doors that kind of took a few too many issues for them, you know, bouncing around. I didn't like that. I thought that.
It did feel like the last couple of issues, it's like, come on, you've been fighting the same battle for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, that sort of derailed it for me, but I think this was a really good closing issue. I gave the final issue a B+. Overall, I think this was a solid miniseries, maxi series, and I would say the overall I would give it a B, but this last one was a really strong finish, and I gave it a B+.
For me, I'd go with an A-. They did, like I said, a lot of good stuff, both in this issue and overall. I liked, the basic storyline, where they ended things, and it was a lot of fun. I like the weekly format. When they've got a good story, it helps them keep the story momentum going, but it's also, I think, hard to get that many creators on board and keep the trains running on time so much. So it's, I don't know when the next time we're going to get another weekly series like this. With everything going bi-weekly, there's probably also less of a need for it over at DC. Not everything, but a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, that's very true, because how many... I didn't count them all up, but there had to be at least a dozen titles that were going to be bi-weekly in the new format after the three-month launch of Rebirth titles. And, yeah, why would you, at that point, try to shoehorn a weekly in there and have the bandwidth to maintain that? In fact. So, yeah, that's a good point.
I think for a couple of things, it makes sense, but anything it does, you could do pretty much just as well bi-weekly or every other week. But I like the idea of an umbrella title for either the Justice League characters or maybe the Titans or the Batman family or whatever, where you've got a bunch of characters, none of which can totally hold their own book, but if you get a half a dozen in there and kind of rotate through, you might be able to maintain some stuff. So we'll see what they do going down the line. Again, I think they've had enough success with the Batman and Robin Eternal and Batman Eternal that I'd be surprised if they don't try to do something else down the line.
Yeah, this sold better than the Futures End Weekly, but it didn't sell quite as well as the Batman Eternal, the 52-issue one, right? It's right there in the middle somewhere.
It's more or less on track with how Batman Eternal did near the end.
Yeah.
So, more or less, I would say, because Batman Eternal started over 100,000, quickly dropped below 80, and then after it went kind of with the returnable stuff out of the equation, it was around 64,000 down to around 44,000. after the first issue, Batman and Robin Eternal was around 54,000, and then it drifted down to around 36,000. Granted, I don't have the last month's worth of issues, of course. So it was lower, but I think if Batman and Batman Eternal had just kind of kept going, that's more or less the area it would have gone in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they should do something other than a Batman book for the next weekly book, but again, there's less need for a weekly book like we were just talking about. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is X-Men 92 number 1. This, of course, is going to make everybody long for the good old days of the 90s over at Marvel. Remember back in that period where everyone was wearing jackets in the books and everybody at the stands was pretty much walking away? This was... I'm going to be honest. I did not have high expectations for this title going in. Having just recently read the Secret Wars X-Men 92 series, I kind of knew what I was going to get here. And what were you thinking going in?
I had zero expectations. I am one of the few people that's never seen the animated series from 92. So I didn't have any kind of basis there. I was imagining it was an all ages version of the X-Men, which, you know, I read a few X titles, but I'm not a diehard fan. So I didn't have a lot of expectations going in either.
I was taking this as more of the X-Men from the comics of the 90s than the X-Men cartoon.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
But, you know, I don't know. Either way, this was very cartoony art in a kind of not-so-good way. And it does feel like, I don't say like the X-Men cartoon, because it doesn't. It feels cartoony, though. And there were just a lot of aspects of this that, for a rated T title, which is teen, it reeked of kind of all agesness.
Hmm.
It was very wordy dialogue and not in the best of ways. And there were times it felt like it was almost being written down to the reader, and unnecessarily so.
Yeah, I had assumed that the animated series was in 92, but maybe it wasn't. That was directly where I went, was this is in the style of the animation from that cartoon series inspired by, and there would be more. That's exactly what I was expecting. I think the style of the artist, very reminiscent of animation in the 90s.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when that series was, but as I recall, it had at least a decent amount of action to it, and catchy theme song, too. This just seemed to be bringing in a lot of the Generation Next characters, I'm thinking it was, when, you know, we got M originally introduced, and what's his name, the guy with the exploded, you know, chest or whatever. And it's funny because they do a really good job of introducing a lot of people, but not all of them. Crap, I'm forgetting his name too. Anyways, this seemed like it was going after the characters of the 90s, but really prior to 92 or whatever, when Image started, the book had Claremont as the writer for a while, at least on one of the titles, I think. I could be wrong on that. Jim Lee was the artist. I mean, they had high caliber creators. And this, I don't want to say reeks of amateur hour, but it's certainly got proportions that seem a little off. There's, everybody seems like they're about 6 inches to a foot shorter than they should be. It just kind of squashed down, like a bad aspect ratio or something. And just, man, the amount of dialogue on some of these pages is staggering. It's one of those things that, unless you're a hardcore fan of the 1990s Marvel and X-Men in particular, or just loved the Secret Wars X-Men 92 series from a couple of months ago or whatever, I really would have a very, very hard time recommending this to anybody. I'm sure there is an audience for it, but it's certainly not something I'm going to steer somebody towards.
Is Alpha Red an existing character?
Yes.
Yep.
Omega Red is. Alpha Red is new.
Okay. Yeah, I'd never heard of that character before, so... There can't be a fan club for him yet. And so, yeah, you've got to be an ex person that just wants all to read all the books. This is it's okay. It's just definitely not my style of comic, and I probably was not the audience that they had in mind when they proposed it anyway. So I'm going to give it a C. I think it's an average comic, but it'd probably be grade a little higher in somebody else's hands that maybe was more of a fan of this type of stuff.
So what audience do you think it was aimed at?
20 years younger than me. 20 to 30 years younger than me. I think it's a good, like, maybe an entry-level book, you know, to get a sense of what X-Men Adventures would be like, maybe. I don't know.
It just seems like there's so many characters floating around here, it'd be hard for somebody to keep track of them. And, I mean, again, I've read the different, you know, X-Men 92 and other kind of dated books they've done. Hell, I was reading X-Men back in 92. And this doesn't really pull the nostalgia chords for me. It's not really impressing me with the writing or the art style. They may just be going after, like you said, a totally different audience than me. But I'm going to say a bit of a easy, you know, person to I don't say necessarily an easy person to please, but an easy person to not kind of annoy or whatever, if you know what I mean. This just, I read this and I'm thinking, wow, I am surprised they are publishing this. I don't know who they're going after, and it may just be that they mismarketed this, and had they marketed it more clearly, I would have just stayed away from it. If I had to pick one Marvel book to drop, you know, put a gun on my head type thing, this would be the first one on the list, no question asked.
Okay.
I'm going to give it another couple issues just to see where it goes, see if this was an anomaly or not. I doubt it is. This is not for me. That much I can say with absolute certainty. As to how quickly I'll cut it loose, it depends how many I've got on pre-order, probably.
Yeah. I thought there was some stuff with the kids in the class early on, and I know that was only a very small number of pages, but it was reminiscent of that Spider-Man and the X-Men book. I kind of got that sense from it, and that had a little sense of fun, and so I was thinking, well, maybe that's where this is going. And it didn't maintain that throughout, though. It kind of changed gears and went in a different direction. And so so there was some kernels of stuff that I could see that might resonate with some people, but I think as a whole it just didn't work. So I'm with you.
I mean, there are a lot of things they could have done that would have worked for me, but they only kind of teased it, and in many places it's because we'd read other stuff. It's like, oh, they could go that way like they did with this other title. And like you said, they just didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
As to whether that was a failure of execution or if they executed exactly what they set out to do, that I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm going with a D+, and like I said, I'll probably stop pre-ordering this. I was going to say it'd be the first mainstream Marvel Universe book that I'd be doing that with, but it's not a mainstream Marvel book. I don't know quite what it is, though. That's part of my confusion.
Well, does that get you out of the bundle?
Don't know. That's a good question. If it's part of the bundle, I'm certainly not going to turn down 10% off through DCBS on all the other Marvel books in the bundle. That would be one of the few things that would keep it on the list.
Yeah, you'd probably have to really take a look at, you know, because if you drop that one, you might want to take a look at some others.
That's the risk these publishers run, is once I drop one thing, you know, floodgates could open.
If the math is right and you break the bundle, then if you're going to drop that one, you might want to take a hard look at some others at the same time. And you can send these guys, these creators, a note and say, look what you've done. Look what you've done.
Well, it's one of those things.
How long have you been all in?
On the mainstream Marvel stuff?
Yeah, in DC.
DC, long, long, long time for the most part. Marvel, that's a little tougher question because there was usually a book or two that I wasn't getting, you know, like a Punisher book or something like that, maybe. But this is one of the few books where I just read it and it's like, there's nothing here for me. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm okay sitting through this is a little bit of a boring story arc. I'm not so crazy about this writer, this artist or whatever, but there's something there for me. And with this, I couldn't find anything. no witty dialogue, no new interesting characters, no great art, no great writing, no clever ideas, no nothing.
Now, in the past, when I have mentioned the idea of even dropping a book, you tell me, I'll have to go find the tape, I don't, but you tell me that, well, if you're there for the valleys, then you appreciate the peaks all that much more. So
this isn't an ongoing title to really have that with.
Okay.
If this were the main X-Men book, heaven forbid.
If there was no 92 on it, and it was just X-Men number one.
Yeah, and it was part of the main continuity line and all of that, it'd be like, I'd give it a little longer leash.
Mm, gotcha. Okay.
Because I've been reading the X-Men since at least issue 180 off the rack. And I've got further issues back and whatever, but this is its own little bubble of continuity. It doesn't have that protection, if you will, of it's not part of a shared universe. It's not something I've got a long-term attachment to. It's not something I expect people to remember this time next year. It's a fair question, though.
Oh, is this going to be 6 issues and then done? Or maybe you think it'll make it to 12?
Assuming it's not bi-weekly, I would say 6.
Yeah.
It's one I don't expect to last long.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that. It could do wonderfully, but if so, I'd be both surprised and frankly a little disappointed. This is one that if it starts above 20,000 would be a little surprising. If it stays above that for any length of time, I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
I think they were, again, I don't know what they're going after. It's not nostalgia. It's, I don't know. I am puzzled by this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all of that having been said, shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yep.
This is Powerlines number 1. It's by Jimmy Robinson. He's doing the writing, the art, the everything. This is, I mean, he's even coloring and lettering it. I mean, he does everything here. This is one where I've read his previous stuff, so I knew what to expect. There's a lot of profanity in here, just a ton of it, particularly at the beginning. And I'm going to say it's most likely kind of under the guise of, you know, keeping it real. And in my notes, I put that as keeping it real, yo. Just get that street vibe in there. And I'll be honest, it kind of does make it feel more legitimate, more real, like this is the way those characters would probably talk in a I'm white and have no idea how they really would talk kind of a sense. But this is how I would picture, you know, the guys who are going to go out and do graffiti and stuff in you know, guys from the hood or whatever. That's how they're portrayed in movies, television, what the hell do I know? So the profanity, it rings true, even if I don't particularly like it, but I'm just not a fan of profanity to begin with. I think it's for, frankly, the verbally lazy.
As is the right-wing conservative nut job aunt or mother who spews nothing but bigotry and hatred and stuff that you sometimes see on people's Facebook posts. So, it was that one was a jarring character. She was awful.
I actually found her much more offensive than the profanity.
Yeah.
And not because I thought it was a bad portrayal or unfair portrayal of somebody. I thought it was probably dead on accurate for some people. And I find those people somewhat offensive. This totally deals with race issues, prejudices on both sides of the fence here.
But you know what? The art style doesn't fit the tone of the book. And I mean, it's weird because I've read books that take on important issues like that, comics that examine those things, and their art style is such that it's a more serious tone in the art style. I just didn't feel like the art fit the tone of the book because of the kind of grittiness and realism that it seemed like the dialogue was going for, and the scenes that they were setting and the characters that they were writing, it just didn't fit with the art, I didn't think. It just seemed like it was two different books.
Interesting. I mean, I see where you're coming from there. I mean, to me, it's Jimmy Robinson's art style, so it's, you know, it is what it is. It didn't feel like it was running counter to the story, but it also didn't feel like it was adding to it the way you're suggesting it, arguably, I don't say a more appropriate art style, but I know where you're coming from there, and I see it. To me, where this falls down a little, and I've got certain expectations for for Jimmy Robinson, having read Bomb Queen, Five Weapons. I mean, I've read his stuff. He's a very solid writer and artist, and when he gets going on his groove, just has some really fun stuff. This doesn't even really live up to the solicit, because the solicit was a local street hood surviving in a crime-infested ghetto, has his life turned around when an ancient magic grants him superpowers, except his abilities only activate in an upscale white community that may not accept him.
None of that. None of that was really evident.
At the end here, we see the magic powers being used back in his crime-infested ghetto neighborhood at the high school.
Yeah.
So it kind of runs counter to the solicit. And this is all setting things up. We get to know the players pretty well, and why a conflict is frankly inevitable given these characters. They are never going to see eye to eye on just about anything. It's just not possible, I think, for these sorts of fictional characters. I would like to think in the real world, characters or people like these characters could eventually live peacefully together. Don't see that happening here, because that would make for a boring story. I again, like that sense of inevitable conflict. I like getting to know these characters, but I also came out of this issue thinking, you know, this is what, like a 4-issue series, maybe? I'm assuming it's a limited series. I could be wrong on that, actually. I wanted more out of this issue. I wanted it to actually get from, you know, the opening reveal or whatever of there are magic powers in this world to let's see something happen. And in things like Five Weapons and whatnot, I felt Jimmy Robinson usually had a stronger first issue and really got the solid hook of the story in there. And I'm going to continue with this, one, because I've pre-ordered it, and two, I've got faith in the creator, but I was hoping for a little bit more on the page than I kind of got.
Yeah, I read Jimmy Robinson's The Empty. I think that's the latest thing I've read from him. And The Empty had some promise at the beginning, but it lost its way a little bit. This one, that Native American that they stuck in the end there too, I thought that was just kind of a tag on right at the last page, and I thought that was a weird zig. We hadn't really spent enough time establishing, you know, what we're doing in this area, in this part of the story, and then to kind of, well, let's take some more real estate, precious real estate in our first issue, and kind of derail that too. I thought that was a little misstep. I would have probably saved that for another time.
I thought that was a callback to the opening where we get all the explanation for the powers.
Yeah, which also went on a little too long. I think that could have been one panel, and then let's get into the story and see and meet some people. Both of those, I thought, could have been compressed a little bit or omitted for, I mean, that could come later. That kind of exposition could come later. I just think you get right into the story. Yeah, let's get the kid that's supposed to change that didn't really change yet. You know, he had a power that showed up, and then it showed up a little bit later, and, he seems like the same kid. He doesn't seem to have really had a change of heart yet, and, I guess that'll come, and hopefully we'll see what the connections are between all these characters that are very different. And maybe that's the story, that connection is what holds them all together. I don't know. It meandered a tad.
Meander is a good way to put it, because, I mean, as you're talking there, I'm thinking, you know, that opening bit with the tagging and stuff, that went on a bit. The whole, oh, she's lost her phone, she's upset about it, went on a bit. A lot of things went on a bit too long. I think the whole thing could have been tightened up substantially and then freed up a good kind of 6 pages or whatever easily, if not more, at the end to really get the story fully kicked off,
mm-hmm.
and give us a sense of really where this is going and why.
Yeah, just to give you a little bit more investment in who these people are, enough to want to follow them a little bit more. I'm like you. I think I have a couple of these on pre-order, so I'm still in for a couple of issues, but it wasn't as good as I was hoping. Still an above average book. I gave it a C+, but it's got a little work to do in that second issue.
I would agree with that. I was toying around with a B-, but I think a C+ is the way to go. And I think it is, again, if it was almost any other creator, I'd just say, you know, it is what it is. I've seen Jimmy Robinson really do some great stuff. and show that he can add some depth and intelligence to a story or whatever, even if the characters are idiots. He can have some clever writing there. I don't feel that was really in evidence here yet. I'm hoping we get that in future issues. But this was underwhelming. It shows promise. It has some moments, but it doesn't have enough of them for me to say people really ought to go check this out. If you want a good sense of his work, Five Weapons is probably the one I would recommend. So I am slowly catching up on my reading. I've still got probably 75 or so issues left to read, mostly from the last 2 weeks, I think, prior to this one.
Yeah, it's only a couple weeks for you.
This shipment was only about 24 books, so it gives me an opportunity to kind of catch up if I get some serious reading done soon. But the next one, next shipment's looking to be another huge one, so I'm hoping to kind of get caught up, because then it's time to edit the preview spotlight. Deadline will have passed by the time this airs. Crunch the next set of numbers, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, March is weird because not only is it a 5-week month, which always waters down the number of titles week to week, and you know it's in that first quarter, which is usually a weaker 3 months than the rest of the year in as terms of books and number of and that changes a little bit too. So I think that those two things really made this a weird week, and last couple have been kind of weird, but this one especially, I thought this fifth week of the month was a bit of a downer.
I was okay with that because I needed a small week. Man, I am struggling to keep up. I read, I think, issues 23, 24, and 25 of Batman and Robin Eternal prior to reading the one we just reviewed here. There's just the accelerated schedule on some of these books is, on the one hand, it's nice. On the other hand, it's getting hard to keep up. So I may have to start really seriously thinking about, should I cut back by a couple of titles here and there?
Yeah, or after we review our three books for this week, we talk about books from a month ago. The rest of them that we're caught up on.
That may not be a bad thing. If there's particular titles, not in terms of an actual review like we usually do, but just, you know, that people want to hear our thoughts on or whatever, part of it even there is I'm behind on about half the books I'm reading because I'm got about 75 books to catch up on.
Yep. I'm with you. I know they stack up, and when they stack up, you really get behind.
Yeah. It's, I guess, a nice problem to have compared to others I could have, I guess. But yeah. So we had the Comic Book Page teleconference on April 2nd. Had some Skype issues. It'd been a while since I'd done a teleconference, so as I was getting new people on, I would get kicked off the call. It was bizarre stuff. But we worked through most of those, and people seemed to have a good time. A number of people showed up. Plan is to do another one. We're going to do that the Saturday right after Previews comes out. So that would put the next one on April 30th. We're going to do it 7 p.m. Central. That's 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, if I did the time zone calculations right. If not, oh well. 7 p.m. Central, Texas time, that's when I'm going to be on. How about that? We'll talk about Previews and really anything else about comics and stuff you want to talk about. It's a bunch of fun. Like I said, we had a bunch of people on, had a great time. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, I think that does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Bloodlines number 1 from DC, Black Panther number 1 from Marvel, and Fix number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.